All right, let's take our Bibles and let's turn to 1 Samuel chapter 1. 1 Samuel chapter 1, we'll pick up from last time looking at verses 19 through 28 of chapter 1. So if you're taking notes, this will be part 2 of our study of Hannah's life of prayer and praise. If you have the handout, I will reference it just briefly. And then I'll show you what we'll be looking at, Lord willing, next week. And then the week after that, I'll try to remind you, is the week of Thanksgiving, which is Wednesday. We won't have that week. So you have a night off for good behavior. Yep, you have a night off for good behavior. So
show up twice.
Yeah, I was going to say, so Charlie and I will be the only ones here. No, but so... I'll give you the outline, but all kidding aside, so this is part 2 of a life of prayer and praise on Hannah, and so we'll be looking at the second part tonight, and then next week, look, Lord willing, to try to finish up, but more on that later. I'm going to read you something first before. It's a poem. It's a brief one. It's just a portion of it, and I think it might help a little bit. It says, and it's dealing here with commitment to the Lord. And the need to be committed to the Lord in word, deed, whatever it may be. But it says, all to thee is yielded. I am not my own. Blissful, glad surrender. I am thine alone. The idea is being committed to the Lord and the Lord's purposes and stuff. I thought about that when I was looking at some of these poems and hymns on commitment, these things on commitment, because in many ways, like the poem, one of the things we'll see tonight is in Hannah's is regarding Hannah's response to her prayer. If you were with us last time, which if you weren't or don't remember, I'm going to review it. But Hannah had made her prayer, and we're going to tonight see whether or not, and this is one way to think of what we're looking at tonight, will she keep her word? In other words, she has prayed. She's made a very strong commitment to the Lord. And so the question is, will she remain committed to what she promised to the Lord in her life? And we'll see this idea of continued faithfulness with her as well. One of the interesting things with Hannah, of course, I think of is praise and prayer. Those ones are pretty obvious with her. But she's very faithful and she's very committed. And we'll even see that into as Samuel grows up a boy, in particular next week. But let's take our handouts out, and I'll reference what we're going to look at tonight. So we've covered Roman numeral 1 and 2. So tonight we're looking at Hannah's prayer answered, and that will correspond to the verses there, 19 through 28. And we'll look at Hannah's blessing and obedience. So if you're taking notes, what we'll do is I'm going to review the what we looked at last time, just briefly the setting. Some of those types of things, and then we'll look at what we looked at last week in those first 18 verses. But in terms of the text tonight, if you're taking notes, 19 through 20 is Hannah's blessing. So if you just were following the outline, it's the next portion. And that is Roman numeral 3, letter A. So then, of course, verses 21 through 28, which is probably the part Gene will read. Hannah's obedience. So we'll review what we've covered so far. Then we'll look at verses 19 through 20, which is Hannah's blessing. And then we'll see Hannah's obedience in verses 21 through 28. And so we'll look at that tonight. But let's do a little bit of a review. I mentioned to you that Judges, that we're sort of in this period between the Judges and the Kingdom period. So there's this transition period. And the way to think of it is, of course, God promised Abraham a nation, people, all those, or a great name rather, and land. They get to the land through Joshua, and they're distributed among the 12 tribes. I told you I had a professor one time call the 12 tribes a loose confederation. And it is helpful because they are united, but they're not quite united under one ruler. And there's a lot of chaos for many reasons in the book of Judges. But one of the things to think of is when you go from Judges, and I'm going backwards here for me, Judges to the Kingdom period, there isn't like a central ruler. You'll also see that most of the rulers aren't particularly good sometimes. But anyway, what we need to do is get from the period where there's not a single ruler or overseer to a period of kingship or the monarchy. I used this verse last time. It's Judges 21:25. You've heard this before. In those days, there was no king in Israel. And so what? Everyone did what was right in his own eyes, which has some various application there. But nevertheless, there wasn't a king. And so you have this loose confederation. We need to move to that kingdom period. 1 Samuel, if you want to read it, an easy way to remember it is it starts with Samuel. There's three key figures. Samuel, anyone remember the next person? Saul, because that's the first king, the people's king. Nevertheless, and then we have the third one, of course, is David. So when you read 1 Samuel, just think of you've got Samuel, Saul, and then David that's moving us into the monarchy and all those promises of David, the Davidic covenant, and all that kind of thing. But in order to have a Samuel, we have to have a mom, don't we? And so that's what we're looking at with Hannah. And Samuel is used in a variety of ways to infect spiritual change as well as the establishment of the kingdom. Now, a couple of themes or lessons, I pointed these out to you last time. The Lord honors faithful, humble prayer. We'll see that in particular tonight. The Lord desires that we be patient during his seeming delays. We all like to do that, right? To be patient. Yeah, we don't like patience anymore. I actually think the cell phone and some of those things has made us less patient. Advantages, but disadvantages. Three, answers to our prayers should lead to praise, which is what we'll look at next week in particular. We need to follow through with any commitments, vows, V-O-W-S, made to the Lord. And then finally, the Lord desires continued faithfulness. So we started looking at Hannah's life. And when we looked at Hannah's life, that is, if you're looking at your sheet there, both her circumstances, which lead to her prayer and peace. The circumstances, so her husband had two problems because he had two what? I know the ladies back there are being really quiet, but I'm pulling your leg. But he had two wives, and we suspect, obviously, the text implies that Hannah wasn't able to conceive, so she was barren, like some of the examples in like Genesis or with Samson's mom. And so she was unable to. Now, was she happy or sad about it? Sad, right? So at the beginning, she was what? Sad. Her countenance was affected by it. Her heart was impacted by it, which is to be understood. So then in verses 9 through 18, we see where she prays. So she turns to the Lord in prayer. And she offers to return what to God if he gave her a son? Return the son back. In other words, she would return him if she would do that. Right, exactly. And he would be able to go and to serve, which is quite a statement on her behalf. And this will come into whether or not does she go back and say, I made a rash decision, Lord, oops, or will she follow through with it? Now, after she prays, I made the case for her peace came when? After she prayed. She prayed to God. We use the Philippians chapter 4 verses there. I think I used 6-7 if my memory is right, something like that. And when she prayed, before she prayed, she was sad. She didn't eat. Afterwards was the opposite effect. And so did her circumstance change? Not yet. Not in the sense that the prayer hadn't been answered. So like Hannah, our circumstances may not change, but like we saw with Philippians, we can have peace when we take those concerns and leave them with God. I would think of it this way. If somebody were to ask me, what you're doing is in a sense leaving the decision and the outcome to God. And you can't really leave it in better hands. So you can have peace knowing he knows about it and he'll act upon it. He may not act upon it right away. And of course, she was quite a passionate prayer warrior, as we'll see some more later. All right. So having said all that, she's prayed. She feels better. In other words, even her countenance has changed. She's eating. So she has that peace, but her circumstance hasn't changed. So immediately the Lord doesn't answer her prayer, right? Have you ever had that? Okay, so we've prayed, she has, and now we're waiting on God to act. We don't know. I mean, you probably know from the story, but we don't know a lot of times how God's going to act. And in this case, she's going to actually return home. And then in due time, which is God's time, he does ultimately answer the prayer. All right, So someone read for me who wants to read a short reading, 19 through 20, because Gene will probably, my guess is, read 21 through 28, but maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong.
19 and 20, you said?
Yeah, that's all, just those two.
Then they arose early in the morning, saying, because I have asked him of the Lord.
All right. Thank you, Connie. All right, so like I said, the prayer has been given, her countenance are eating, everything has changed, so she has what we might think of as peace at that time. God hasn't answered the prayer, and as Connie was reading, of course, the next morning, they get up and they worship. It's interesting, you'll notice, and I'm just going to tell you this sort of as an aside, I don't want to get off the beaten path with this. If you were to read 1 Samuel chapter 1 through, I don't know, say 6 and 7, you're just reading it casually. One of the things that's being shown here is a faithful family versus an unfaithful family. The unfaithful family is Eli. And so you're seeing this repeated worship and favorability on the one family, which is Elkanah's, versus Eli's. Eli's family, if you know anything about his sons, they weren't too great, were they? So, and just to point that out, so you see why they're the author is repeating this. They went and they worshiped before the Lord, and then they returned once again to their house. So worship preceded the departure. She's prayed, she has peace, it yields itself to worship, and that of course precedes the departure. And the answer to the prayer hasn't come yet. And so this doesn't just happen instantaneously. Now, where is Ramah? Well, it's the hill country, and depends on the Bible map. Mine doesn't have it in there. If you wanted to know, because I didn't mention it last week, it's about 15 miles north of Jerusalem. So if you have a Bible map, you'd have to find the right kind, because it may not have it. Just find Jerusalem on most things, and if you go sort of north, about 15 miles, roughly, it's in the countryside there, so if you're curious about that. But I do want to mention something. So they go back, and obviously they have relations there, but I want us to pay attention to the ending there. That's pretty self-explanatory what that means. We all can take that with the G-rated version. I don't have to explain that. Notice the very ending. The Lord remembered her. Okay, let's look at this, because, of course, God is what? He's omniscient and all of those, right? So he's all-knowing. Is it possible for God to, in our sense, forget something? Oops, I forgot that. Well, no, of course not, okay? So we can't think of it like myself, where you ask me, would you pray for something, and I say yes, and if I don't write it down, I forget, okay? That's not what's going on here. God doesn't forget in the concept we think of. I just figured this subject doesn't come up very often, so I'll try to explain it. So God obviously doesn't forget. So this isn't like a mental recall, if you're following me. He's not sitting there thinking, you know, Dave told me that I do remember that now. I completely lost track of that. That's not what's going on here, okay? And I'll just give you an example. But what's happening now is God is, in a sense, not recalling something he forgot, but recalling the need to act, okay? I'm trying to explain this, and I'm going to show you this in a minute. So the Lord, in many cases, is acting upon either something he said he's going to do or perhaps a request for something, okay? So I'll try to explain this. I'm going to show you an example. So it's the idea of, in this case, Hannah prayed, right? Do you think God forgot that she prayed? Well, of course not. You're in this sort of waiting period. Now the time comes to fulfill the prayer request. Turn with me to, I'm going to try to show you this, because I just want to make sure we don't walk away with a misconception where we humanize it thinking, okay, like Pastor Pace forgets stuff, that must be what's being said. That's not what's being said. Let's turn to Exodus chapter 2. This is just one of many examples. This one's not used quite as often. I find it to be an easier one actually to use as an explanation. Because oftentimes, if you ever read and it says God remembered something, the idea there is God is recalling to mind the need to act, fulfill a request. Maybe it's a promise of his. I find this one to be helpful. It's Exodus chapter 2, verse 24 in particular. So you probably know the general setting to this, right? The Israelites are in Egypt, and they cry out to God. They want to be delivered from Egypt and the bondage of Pharaoh and so on and so forth. So that's what, if you see, for instance, verse 23, it says, "In the sons of Israel sighed because of their bondage. They cried out and they asked God to help us," right? They wanted help. Look at verse 24. "So God heard their groaning and remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." Okay? So just think of it in simple terms this way. Israel is in Egypt. They're under bondage and they need to be delivered because they'll never be a nation unless God brings them out of that, right? God hears the groaning and he is now going to do what? He's going to act upon his covenant promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, what is that promise? Well, let's turn to Genesis 15. This is just the way I explain it. There's several other ways to explain the same thing. Turn to Genesis 15 real quick. And I'm going to read Genesis 15 in verse 13. Abram, or this is before his name's changed to Abraham, was promised a son. This is sort of that section of his life. In Genesis 15, 13, God said to Abram, "Know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs." Where do you think that is? Egypt. Okay. "Where they will be enslaved and oppressed for 400 years. So God is, in a sense, saying this is, they're going to be under oppression. They're going to be under oppression for this long, but eventually I'll bring them out and deliver them. So when you get to Exodus 2:24, what God is remembering is, I made this promise back here in Genesis. Now I'm going to act upon that promise. You following me? So in the sense, when God's remembering something, he's not thinking, you know what? I completely forgot that I made that promise to them. What God is doing is he's recalling to mind. Some people use that expression. But basically what God is doing is, I made this promise back here in Genesis 15. Now I'm going to act upon that promise. So in a sense, now we go back to Hannah. Hannah makes the prayer. Do you think God forgot that she prayed it? No. So go back to Genesis, 1 Samuel with me, and let's look at this again. Look at that and see if it helps. So in 1 Samuel chapter 19, she's prayed. Chapter 1, verse 19, rather. She's prayed. They get up, they worship. She and her husband, they go back, have relations. And the Lord remembers that she had prayed this prayer. Now he's going to act upon that which she already asked. One person puts it this way. The Lord is saying, I have not forgotten you or my promises made to, for instance, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now I will act upon those. So that's what God is, in a sense, doing when we use that language. God is saying, I remember when Hannah asked for this. Now I'm acting upon it. Okay, so he hasn't slipped his memory. He's acting upon it. All right. And so when does the birth come? And so you can see this is the case. So the Lord remembered, now he's going to act upon it. And so it came about in due time that she conceived. So when was due time? God's time. That's why I use that expression. So she prays. And then when they have relations, God recalls to mind, is usually the expression, and he is now acting upon that, and she's able to conceive, whereas before she wasn't. Because who is it that ultimately controls life and death and birth and all that? So God's acting upon that which she prayed and promised. That would be the way to think of it. So in due time is God's time, and God now is acting upon it. And so one of the things to think about with this is the obvious. Does God answer our prayers right away?
Not necessarily.
Yeah, it's yes and no, isn't it? Yeah, it's situational, right? We shouldn't just assume because we prayed or Pastor Pace did Sunday morning right away. Could it? Sure. But not always. So we just need to remember we have to be patient. We don't need to, I don't want to go too far off the beaten path here. That's what got Abraham and Sarah in so much trouble. Because if they had just waited, a lot of times what do? Well, God, you're taking too long. Let me intervene and show you how it's done. Okay. And that's just always going to end up on the dirt path. But all right, so let's look at verse 20 before we finish, and then we'll let, I assume, Gene read. But so Hannah's able to conceive in God's time. That was the time he had. She gives birth to a son, and then she names him Samuel, because I have asked of him of the Lord. Now, this is interesting. I won't belabor this too long. Technically, in Hebrew, it means his name is God. but there are sort of different understandings of variations of the meaning. So it also can mean ask of God or heard of God. If you ever heard that. So the name, in other words, could mean, depending on how it's used, his name is God, or it could be understood, ask of God or heard of God, which is appropriate, right? She prayed, she asked God, God heard. And so whenever she brought to his mind or her mind him, she would have remembered that. The Ryrie Study Bible says, Samuel serves as a continual reminder, that is his name, of God's mercy towards those who call upon his name. That's sort of the idea, is that God in his name and is in his essence, he recalled and he answered that prayer that she had petitioned before him. And it was an act of mercy on his behalf. All right. So having said that, they've conceived, they've given birth, and now the moment of truth really comes, though. Because they're going to have to go and decide, she is in particular, both parties, she and her husband are involved, is she going to be faithful to her commitment to the Lord, or is she going to sort of say, you know, God, I made that, I was emotional. You know, us women, we get emotional, and we just made a mistake. It was just a rash decision. But or will she fulfill that promise? The other thing to notice, too, as you read through this, Elkanah, I've mentioned to you this before, sometimes he's seen as, I don't want to say negative, but he's not always perceived, I think, accurately. One of the things you'll notice with him, meaning her husband, that's because he had two wives, he's a very faithful and obedient man. He continuously goes and is faithful to what is called of a Jew at that time. So you see this faithfulness. And I think both of those parents contribute to much of the character of Samuel. So you have both positive, if you will, there. Go ahead and read for us, Jean. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Then the man Elkanah went out with all of his household to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and pay. So I have also dedicated him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he is dedicated to the Lord. And he worshiped the Lord there.
All right. Thank you, Jean. All right. So as we look there, we pick up in verses 21 through 28. Again, you mentioned there that they went up again and they continued yearly. So again, the way to think of it is before the prayer, before all this went on, and after, what do? They continuously remain faithful. That they don't do, in a sense, come to God. I've heard someone express it this way, like God's a spare tire. Things are going bad, so I go and ask God. He answers, and then I go back to life as before. In this case, they were faithful. They continued to worship God, and they continued to do this as ongoing. And of course, do you think that affected Samuel? Sure. Would have been a good positive role model for him as well. Now, I want to look at something here as we look, since we're focusing on Hannah, though, primarily. Look at verse 22. She doesn't go right up, right away. She says, I'm not going up, meaning not yet, until the child is weaned. Does anyone happen to know Jewish children about how long that would be? Do you know? It's about 2 to 3 years. Give or take.
Two and a half.
Yeah, so if you think 2 to 3 years, now think about that for a second. So all of this isn't happening like a machine gun, so there's time lapses that go on. But this is 2 to 3 years. Now, I'll tell you, actually, I can't by any means put myself in this position. Could you imagine being a mother? This is the way I think of it. Having a child alone and giving him away that quickly. But imagine having him for 3 years or whatever the case was, 2 to 3 years. That's got to be difficult, wouldn't it? I can't relate to that other than being a father, but that would make it to me seem worse. That would be very difficult because imagine how attached you would be to the child invested in it. So you'll notice there that the child, she's saying, I will go up, but I need him to be weaned first. So we'll say 2 to 3 years. That's the typical Jewish period of time. It's an approximation. And then she says, I will go up there. But notice, forever. She's still determined she's going to do what she promised to do. She's going to keep him. I'm not a female, obviously. I would almost think it'd be easier to just go ahead and give him up. I mean, I'm not saying it'd be easy to do that way, but you wouldn't be as attached, is sort of my point. But the time comes and She is going to go up there. Now, I'll tell you, if you notice verse 23, you can see that he is a well-astute husband. Notice he says in verse 23 to her, do what seems best to you. That means in English, yes, dear. Okay. So for all the men out there who don't listen to their wives, they need to take his advice to be faithful to go to church, right? But they also need to be able to say, yes, dear. So, yeah, that would, I wonder if that's his vernacular there. Yes, dear, I'll let you do that. But you'll also notice again with him is he says, may the Lord's word be confirmed. In other words, we need to fulfill both ends of the spectrum here. But when the time comes, as Jean was reading, this is verse 24. So 2 to 3 years later, she goes up, she brings up this special vow offering. So she's made this commitment. And she's had 2 to 3 years, whatever the case is, to sort of kick it in her head and say, you know what, I wonder if I could come up with some sort of reason to keep him. She doesn't do that. The special vow that she makes, I'll give you the reference to this if you're interested. It's Numbers 15, verses 3 and 8. So Numbers 15, 3 through 8, this was something she needs to do. Some of this, if you just stop and consider what's being shown, Samuel's parents, both of them are equally faithful. They're faithful to the Lord's word. Whereas if you were reading this, not looking so much at Hannah, what you would discover is Eli and his family is the opposite. They are not obedient to the word of God. And the funny thing is Eli is the priest. So you never know who's the most faithful, huh? Anyway, so we move on here. So she does return, and she's going to uphold her vow. So she could have easily probably made a lot of excuses not to follow, but again, it reflects her integrity. Now, I'll draw your attention to, she goes and she makes this offering, so verses 25 through 28, and she brings the boy to Eli. Now, you've got about, we'll just argue and say what, 9 months for the conception to birth process, 2 to 3 years here. And Eli is still the priest there. And this is the same priest, if you remember, that thought she was drunk. Again, I told you, Eli to me is sort of a mixed bag. He does show himself to be faithful to God, but he's also not the most observant of ministers, we would say, at times. But she comes back and she finds him and she says, oh, my Lord, notice this lowercase. So this would be sir. So it's a sign of respect. She says, as your soul lives, my Lord, I am the woman, what, 2, 3, 4 years ago, depending on the scenario, who came and stood before you and was praying. And this boy, the Lord has given to whom? To me. She is still recognizing that God was the ultimate one who gave the gift. She hasn't changed in any of this time. And she goes and she does that. And then in verse 28, it says, and so I have dedicated him to the Lord. I'm not suggesting that we would draw this conclusion. You know, sometimes we have baby dedications. Perfectly fine. I did Olivia's with Maddox. That's not what's going on here. Okay. I'm not suggesting you would think that. That's not what's being said here. This is not a baby dedication in our minds where we would say we're going to bring the child up and all that kind of thing. Technically, what the idea is, I'm going to read this to you. This is the idea of, excuse me, the idea that of a complete and irrevocable giving up of the child to the Lord. So this is a fulfillment, this dedication to everything that she's promised. She said, if you will give me that son, I will give him to you forever. And so that's what's going on here. Just to make sure you're not confused. Baby dedication is fine. That's a commitment to raise the child. That's not what's going on here. She's literally giving her child away, just as she said he would. And I as a mom, obviously as a husband, I can't fathom what a wife would feel like or a mother. That would seem to be very difficult. So the question is, was she committed to what she said? Did she uphold her vow? Yeah, of course she did. That must have been excruciatingly difficult to do that. And so after all this time, she goes, and then you see, and he worshiped the Lord. I assume that that's Eli, but I'm not really sure which of those it is. There's a little bit of confusion on or discussion on that. Some suggest it's Samuel. Some suggest it's Eli. I really am kind of indifferent. It sort of reads like Eli, but nevertheless, the point with Hannah is that she was faithful to what she said she would do, which would have been extremely difficult. Let me give you some lessons here I thought of from this passage that we look at tonight. And if you want to read ahead, you have the handout there. It's essentially chapter 2, those verses 1 through 10, and then a few little straggler verses. But that is Hannah's song of praise or thanksgiving. But three things I took that I thought of with this passage was, first, God remembers and acts in His perfect time. We must be faithful waiting upon Him. And she had to be faithful. In other words, she went back. It wasn't just this immediate response by God. Two, we must fulfill any commitments that we make to the Lord, but regardless of any personal cost, meaning she had to give up her own son to a certain degree, obviously. She was going to leave him there. And then three, everything we receive ultimately comes from whom? God, right? And that's one of the things I think of with her is she recognized that God was the one who gave her this gift of a child and should remind us to